You're listening to The Edie J. Adler Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Shalom, amigos. I am Edie J. Adler. We're doing things a little bit different this time because we're doing it from home. And so you're going to hear all kinds of noises. You're going to hear the clock. Hi, Lola. You're going to hear my birds, possibly my dogs and my cats, and somebody might show up, one of the many pets that I have rescued with my husband. Anyway, I want to talk to you about rescuing pets, as usual. Dogs, cats, birds, fish. Now I have two fish. They were going to just send them down the toilet, and I thought, no, that's not a good idea. Not on my watch. So I have a couple of goldfish, too. And as usual, this show is open to everyone. Every opinion is welcome, as long as we keep it civil, no name calling, no insults. Because if that's what you're looking for, then this is not the show for you. So the shelters are at maximum capacity. And my husband and I have rescued throughout the years many dogs, many cats, birds, a couple of turtles. And I'm going to show you a picture of two of my dogs that was taken earlier today. That's a very vicious pit bull, as you can see. Pit bulls get a very bad rap, and it's not the breed. It's the owner behind the dog that is to blame for their bad behavior. So give them a chance. That's Maya, and she's the sweetest, sweetest, sweetest. Bear with me, please. With the weather in Southern California, my allergies are at maximum. And this is Lola. She keeps introducing herself, saying, hi, Lola. You can see that she's missing some feathers. She was at the bird rescue for 17 years. People seem to not want a bird that is not perfect. I don't really care, you know, as long as they're an animal, fine. And why do they pluck their feathers? Why do people bite their fingernails? Same reason, anxiety. You would be plucking your feathers too if you were at the shelter for 17 years. But now she's with us. She has stopped plucking, and the feathers are growing. And that's why she's here, to encourage you to give an animal that nobody else wants a chance. That said, welcome to the Edie J. Adler Show. I forgot to welcome you. I am Edie J. Adler, and I want to welcome a very special guest, Brianna Siegler. She is director of Lisa's Care Connection in Burbank, California. And she's a beautiful person, beautiful woman. I also want to remind everybody that I am a strong supporter of Israel. I don't speak for my guests. I'm speaking for myself. I support Israel. If you hate Israel, change the channel. I don't want you following me or whatever. You know, I support Israel. And so, Brianna, thank you so much for joining us. You guys are doing amazing work. And I will tell a little bit about my personal experience with Lisa's Care Connection. But please, before I do that, please, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
First of all, I want to say hi, Edie. Hi, Lola. Great to be here. So excited for this. Thank you for having me. For the listeners out there, I first met Edie several months ago through Lisa's Care Connection when I came on as the new managing director. And at Lisa's Care Connection, we're a nonprofit that cares for caregivers. What we mean by that is families who are struggling with a dementia diagnosis, they may be navigating Alzheimer's, we're there to lend a helping hand and support them along the way. So Edie was one of our most valued members. She was a caregiver herself. I'll let you get into your story. But what's really nice is that Edie came back into our orbit, now as a volunteer for Lisa's Care Connection, and we appreciate that very much.
Thank you, Bree. And thank you for working for Lisa's Care Connection and for doing what you do, because you have to want to help to do this kind of work. It's not for everybody. It's difficult work, and you do an amazing job. And the way that I came to Lisa, back then it was the office was located in Sherman Oaks, not too far from where I live in California. And I was caring for my parents. Both of them lost their battle against Alzheimer's, unfortunately. Hi, Lola. And I thought I was educated. I thought I had read all the books. I thought I knew what I was getting myself into when I decided to bring my parents into my home once they couldn't care for themselves anymore. And I really wasn't ready. It was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And caring for both of them. And first of all, I adored my father. Mm-hmm. And I was the apple of his eye. And my mother, too. And so watching them deteriorate before my very eyes was very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. And also sometimes having to deal with the aggressive behaviors that come with this thing. I remember one particular day, I was having kind of a nervous breakdown. I was crying. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know where to turn. And a friend of mine, Margie Morenos, thank you, Margie, mm-hmm. sent me a few phone numbers to call. So the first two on the list I called, and one of them was never answered the phone. The other one said that they were at max capacity and they couldn't help me. I said, I'm calling one more number and that's it. I'm done. I don't know what to do anymore. So I called the number and the phone was answered right away. And I'm crying, totally losing it. I couldn't even speak. And I hear on the other end of the line, hi, this is Lisa. How can I help you? Please come down, come down. I was lucky and blessed that that particular day, Lisa was there, and she happened to answer the phone. Mm. And she was so caring and so loving and so compassionate. And she said, come down, come down. Take a deep breath. We're here for you. You are not alone. And let me take down your information, and I'm going to have somebody call you and arrange for you to come and see what we can do for you, what resources we can provide you. So that's how I came into contact with Lisa's Care Connection. And I'm blessed to have Lisa's friendship now for many years. I attended the support groups for caregivers. After I lost my parents, my beloved parents, mm-hmm. I attended the grief support group. And I became part of the family. And I will be forever grateful. Something I learned from my dad, that you have to show your gratitude. He always used to say, if you're not grateful, you can't be happy. You have to be grateful. Even if you're having a bad day, be grateful that you're having a day. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, I made a promise that I would always do anything I could to help people dealing with the same things that I was dealing with, and to support Lisa in whatever she did. She has my unconditional gratitude, support, and love for as long as God lets me. And you're part of my family now, Bree, because you are the director. You're doing an amazing job. And you're the professional, so I'm going to let you tell people exactly what it is that Lisa's Care Connection does.
Sure. I'm very excited to talk about that. But before I do, I would be remiss if I didn't give you praise for walking the talk. When Edie says that she wants to do everything in her power to give back, she means it. She was the first volunteer to raise her hand and say, I want to help out at our big gala that we just had. We put together an inaugural cohort of peer-to-peer mentors. Edie was one of the first people to sign up for that. And if there's ever a message to spread or a hand that we need, you bet Edie's one of the first people to say, I'm here. How can I help? So I want to take a minute to say thank you for that.
Thank you.
As Edie mentioned, Lisa, the namesake of Lisa's Care Connection, for those of you who don't know, was founded by Lisa Gibbons, and she is the TV journalist and personality. Lisa ended up becoming a caregiver for her mother, who had Alzheimer's, both her mother and her mother's mother. And she felt firsthand it was so overwhelming to navigate this. What do you do with a diagnosis? How do you make sure your loved one is safe? How are you taking care of yourself to make sure that you're sustaining your health to be there for the long term? So she made a promise to her family, and she also made that promise to herself. And to this day, she is fulfilling that promise through Lisa's Care Connection. I am so proud to be working for Lisa's Care Connection. Nearly a dozen years ago, when I was a social worker on the neuropsych unit at UCLA Hospital, whenever families were getting a dementia diagnosis and were discharging back to the community or to a facility, I'd always give them resources. And at the top of the list was Lisa's Care Connection. It was called Lisa's Place back then. And I knew that one day, after I got my clinical hours and I sat for my board, I wanted to work for them. So it really is a dream come true to be working for this organization that I've been referring to for over a decade, not just professionally, but personally, with friends and family in my life who are navigating this as well.
And you do, like I said before, I'm not going to get tired of repeating this. You do an awesome job. You have the empathy that you need for this kind of work. Because I've dealt, especially with my parents, I've dealt with care providers, nurses, and most of them were nice people, but some of them were not so nice. And like I said, you're not going to become a millionaire from this type of work. So you do this because you want to help. So what programs do you offer people at Lisa's Care Connection? I know that it's not just for caregivers. I know that sometimes the patients come and enjoy some of your programs also.
Great question. So we offer a host of programs and services. We offer everything from support groups for the caregivers, both virtually and in person. We offer educational and wellness programming. So those are available both virtually and in partnership with the Jocelyn Adult Center located in Burbank. We have a ton of resource referrals. We have a whole wall that's just stacked with brochures for basically any resource that you could need. Do you need someone to come to your home and be an in-home care companion? Do you need legal advice about durable power of attorney? Do you need help with podiatry, finding a family therapist, you name it? So what I love is that somebody could walk through the door. They could also call us, email us, and they may not know what they need or what they're looking for, but we're just there to listen, support, and then get them plugged into the resources that might make their life and their caregiving journey a little bit easier.
And you are a great support. You are. And you have more than one office, right? More than one center throughout the nation. Where are some of the other locations? Because this show could go national too.
That's great. We serve people all over the country. So through our virtual programming, we're really able to expand our reach. However, we're lucky enough to have two physical centers. There's one in Columbia, South Carolina, where Lisa grew up, and then another here in Burbank, California. So Lisa's two homes, Los Angeles, you know, her two home cities. Recently, we've started with programming in Texas as well. So very exciting to expand our reach there. One of the other things that I want to talk about, there's so much that we do. So I you know, gave you the high level, but if I may, I'd love to get into hugs a little bit and talk about your experience with that, if you're willing.
That was going to be my next question. Being one of the first graduates of the HOGS program, why don't you explain to our audience what that is?
HUGS is a peer-to-peer mentorship program. HUGS is an acronym for Helping You Grow Strong. And at Lisa's Care Connection, we really value lived experience. So by that, we mean a caregiver is really going to understand what the difficulties are like, how to handle those late night challenges, what are the tips and tricks, right? So we thought we could provide training to help them become effective communicators and mentors so that some of the more experienced caregivers like yourself can help newer caregivers navigate this world.
How do people find the connection? If somebody is dealing with a loved one with Alzheimer's diagnosis, how do they find this program?
You know, that's actually my favorite question to ask people, among some others. I would say, how did you find out about us? And people have different answers. It really makes me happy that a lot of it is word of mouth. If somebody has a positive experience, they will tell their friend, their neighbor, their coworker, I went through this. Lisa's Care Connection was a great resource. You should go to them too. Some people find us through Google or social media. So there's really a plethora of ways. We're also located within a hospital at Providence St. Joseph Burbank. So we have the benefit of being in a medical center where we get referrals from doctors and social workers, nurses in the hospital. So we can actually go and meet with them in their room before their loved one discharges.
Very nice. Let's talk a little bit about Alzheimer's and dementia. Mm-hmm. People ask me, what's the difference? And I usually say, well, dementia is like an umbrella term, like much like cancer. You can have different types of cancer. You can have different types of dementia. So Alzheimer's is a form of dementia. Am I right?
You said it exactly how I would describe it. Don't have anything to add.
So when should people get concerned? What kind of behaviors should be kind of like a red flag to take their loved one to the doctor and have them evaluated?
So what you're asking about is warning signs to look for. These can range from having trouble with word retrieval, sort of mixing words. You may say bed instead of table. Both of those are items of furniture. But for example, you mean to say one thing and you say another. You can get when loved one starts forgetting how to participate in simple tasks like using the microwave, how to do laundry, how to shampoo their hair. It could also be that they're getting lost or misplacing things. Sometimes people will, you know, find keys or a wallet in something like a refrigerator, right?
Right.
So while these are signs that can be alarming, the important thing is it's not a death sentence. Going to the doctor and getting an evaluation, there are multiple ways that they test them, and there's even brain scans that they can do to confirm the diagnosis and figure out what type of dementia they have. And based on that, you can create and collaborate on a care plan about how to slow the progression of the disease.
And dementia is not always deadly, is it?
Dementia.
Depending on the type of dementia that people are diagnosed with, it's not always a fatal diagnosis, is it?
So dementia is not something that is curable. It is a progressive disease, but the rate at which it progresses varies from person to person. So somebody could receive a dementia diagnosis and then live with dementia for over 10 years, right? So the term, you know, terminal or fatal, we think of it in terms of cancer, like, oh, there's this expiration date. And it's a lot more complex and nebulous with a dementia like Alzheimer's.
Right. You know, one of the things that my mother started doing that I noticed, but I didn't really pay attention to it, She started collecting tissue, Kleenex. She had Kleenex all over the place. She had buckets full of tissue. She would put it under her when she was sitting, all over the place. But she gave me an explanation that made sense at the time. Mm-hmm. When I asked her, why do you need so many Kleenexes? And she said, oh, it's because my nose gets runny and I don't want to, I want to have it handy. Mm-hmm. So I didn't pay attention to that.
Well, first of all, you can't beat yourself up. You know, if she gives a reasonable answer, it sounds, you know, you took it at face value. It made sense. It's really common for people with dementia, especially in the early stages, when they have something called MCI, mild cognitive impairment. They have these compensatory behaviors and they create narratives that rationalize their irrational behavior. So people like your mom, who are really high functioning prior, it's really scary to them when they start to realize something's not right. My cognition is a little off. So the majority of people aren't going to raise their hand and say, I think I may have dementia or I need some help here. They're going to start doing things to compensate for the difficulties that the dementia creates.
Right. Yeah. What is sundown? What is that called? I forget what it's called. Sundown blues?
Yeah. So it's this phenomenon that's tied to your circadian rhythms. Are you familiar with the term circadian rhythms?
Can get yes. but you can explain for not everybody might know what it is.
So your circadian rhythms are tied to your body rhythms and sleep hygiene and how that affects your physical and mental health. So when the sun goes down, thus the name sundowners, it can be really disorienting and disruptive to the circadian rhythm. So people's symptoms can get a lot worse. Somebody who seems, you know, relatively okay during the day with dementia, once the sun goes down, can become more irritable, agitated, confused. They may not want to take their medication or eat their dinner or get ready for bed or brush their teeth. You know, we call dementia the thief of memories. That's what Lisa likes to say. And it's so unfair. It's such a cruel disease.
It is.
I don't know whether that's something you experienced with your family, with your mother or father. Did they have any sundowning?
My mother did. My mother did, yes. I call it the monster that kidnaps your brain. Mm-hmm. And loses you in the labyrinth of your mind.
Mm.
That's what I call Alzheimer's. Excuse me. And President Reagan called it the long goodbye. I call it the long, painful goodbye.
Mm.
Because you lose your loved one much, much sooner than you lose their physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And having someone like you and the other people at Lisa's Care Connection, it's a blessing. It really is. So I want to encourage everybody who is watching or listening, if you're dealing with this, if you think you might be dealing with something, if your loved one starts to do something that seems a little off, maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's a medication they're taking, but why not reach out and ask for help? There's nothing wrong in asking for help. There's no shame in admitting that you can't handle this on your own. And if you have the resources, use them. Use them, absolutely use them.
I so appreciate that call to action. It's really unfortunate that there's so much stigma around this disease and around caregiving for this disease. People would be less hesitant to go to an oncologist to screen for cancer or an endocrinologist for diabetes. But for some reason, maybe because it's in the brain and people can't see the brain, they're more reluctant to seek help for a dementia.
Right.
And I get it. It's really scary. it's really, really hard to navigate when you don't know a lot about it. And that's why we're here. We're non-judgmental. Come through the door. Our services are free. We don't charge anything for support groups, resource referrals, our programs. You know, we have this great program even called Virtual Dementia Tour, and that simulates what it's like to have dementia.
I did that. It's really, really scary. It's really scary. And I encourage people, if they have access to some of this, please do it. Please do it, because it will help you understand what your loved one is going through. And it's important to be patient with them. Don't take it personally. Please don't, whatever is happening, don't take it personally. Don't think they're angry at you. Don't think that they're disrespecting you or ungrateful. It's the illness. And I wanted to run something by you. I think that people might be afraid of admitting dementia treatment because of the name. When you think dementia, most people think demented, and they think that it has to do with being insane or crazy or something like that. I remember the Alzheimer's Association sent, there was a news report or something they were working on Alzheimer's, and they asked me if they could come and interview me when my mom was still with us. And one of the first questions that the reporter asked me, what would I tell someone when they say, your mother is crazy?
Mm.
And I remember saying I would probably slap them. And then I would tell them to go educate themselves, because my mother is not crazy. She is ill.
I love your sense of humor. I love your candor. It's so refreshing. And it's important to have humor in this. You know, it's so serious and it's so heavy. So if you can find those little moments just for a little levity, that's really helpful. Like we were saying, you know, it's misunderstood. Even people who sometimes mean well can say things that feel alienating or judgmental. And the root word, like you said, it has certain connotations. But this is no, dementia doesn't mean that you're any less intelligent. It doesn't mean that you've done anything wrong. It just means that a process in your brain is occurring.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Right. Thank you. How would you recommend that people deal with a difficult situation when it's happening at the moment? For instance, if their loved one is having one of those moments when they start to get aggressive, and they are by themselves or they don't know what to do, what would you recommend? How to handle that?
That's a really good question, and one of the ones that we receive most frequently, because it's really scary when somebody's getting agitated, right?
Right.
And what we suggest is redirecting and soothing. So I know it can feel tempting to argue with them or call them out for being agitated, but just like we're asking you to have empathy with yourself, it's important to have empathy with them. Realize they're not trying to be combative on purpose. They're not trying to be physically aggressive on purpose. This is the disease. So doing things like putting on soft, soothing music or music they like, that can distract them and reorient them. Making sure that if they're saying something that is not grounded in reality, what we would call a delusion, you're not trying to correct them and say, that's not true. There are therapeutic fibs, the clinical term for that. And I'd love to know if you ever did any good therapeutic fibs for your parents. But sometimes just agreeing with people or going along with it, even if it's not based in reality, that's the kindest thing to do.
Yeah, my mom went back to her childhood. Mm. And she turned into maybe 5-year-old child. And she always loved dolls. She had a doll collection. So I bought her more dolls, and I would give her one of her favorite dolls every day after I dressed her and cleaned her up. And she would ask about her parents a lot. Mm. Where's my mom? Where's my dad? And I would, yes, I would lie and say, they're in the other room, or they went to the store, or they're sleeping, whatever. What are you going to tell them? They're in heaven. That doesn't help anybody, because it would break her heart. And 5 minutes later, she would be asking again. Mm-hmm. I also found that she loved when my cats would get on her lap. And my father, we had a three-legged dog, and he was an almost three-legged bird. And he was very attached to those two. So what do you think about that, using pets? Or what if the person taking care of their loved one doesn't have the energy to care for a pet, but it's beneficial to have a pet? What do we do in that situation?
Well, I'm biased like you. I'm a huge animal lover. That's one of the reasons we bonded so early on. There's actual research, though. It's not just animal lovers like yourself and me saying pets do you good. They can lower your blood pressure. They can make you feel less lonely. When you're petting a dog or a cat and an animal, you're releasing a hormone called oxytocin, and that's a bonding hormone. So those things are not just anecdotal. They're scientific, right?
Right.
You did point out, the other side of it, which is that it is a responsibility to care for a living thing. So if you're fortunate enough to live with a spouse or a child or other people, a sibling, and they're able to care for the pet so that the loved one with dementia can just sort of love on them and not have to worry about food and walks and everything, that's ideal. But even for people who are in early stages who have mild cognitive impairment, if they're able to take care of themselves and an animal, then I think that that's a really, really healthy way to sort of slow the progression of the disease and make their day-to-day life better.
Agreed. And if you're going to get a pet, please go to the shelter.
Adopt, don't shop.
Yes. I know Lisa says, take your oxygen first. Please explain.
Okay, so what do they tell you when the flight attendant is doing the emergency preparedness at the beginning regarding the oxygen mask?
Put it on yourself first before you help the others.
Right?
Right.
So we don't question that. We understand if you don't put the oxygen mask on yourself first, then you may not be there to then put it on your kid, your spouse, whomever else. And while they don't question that on the airplane, they question it when it comes to caregiving. So the proverbial oxygen mask, whether that's socializing with your friends, healthy eating, working out, self-care, if you're not doing those things, you're going to burn out and you're not going to be able to be there for your loved one. It's a marathon, not a sprint.
You know, people feel guilty. Mm-hmm. I know I did when you know your parents need care. I didn't feel like I should go get a massage, for instance. I felt, I should take that time and do something else. I haven't paid the bills. Why don't I just pay the bills instead? Or I haven't done the laundry. Let's do that instead. So it's always, like you said, it's like a race. And you forget that you're in the race and you have to take care of yourself. I learned thanks to people like you, but I need you to advise people who are going through this and who may be feeling guilty. And if I take 5 minutes to just go for a little walk around the block, then that's time that I should be using to do something more productive.
I'm so glad that you're saying this, because people understand this intellectually, right? They know it's okay for them to take time for themselves. Doesn't have to mean you're going to a doctor's appointment. You're entitled to getting a pedicure or a massage or seeing a movie. But emotionally, they will not allow themselves those moments of reprieve and respite. But if they're not going to do that, you start to lose yourself. You know, research shows that oftentimes a caregiver can die earlier than the person with dementia, just because of all of the negative effects and stress that caregiving can cause to a person's health and system. So you're not being selfish when you're doing these little things. It's actually the most generous thing that you're doing, not just for yourself, but for your loved ones, so you can be there for them.
That happened to my aunt. My uncle, he was a tall man. He was about 6'2", and he rode horses, played the guitar. He was a strong man. And then he had a stroke. And his wife, my aunt, was tiny, probably smaller than I am. I'm 5'4", about 112 pounds. And she was probably smaller than I was. And this woman would take him into bed, take him out of bed, bathe him, feed him, do everything. And then she had a heart attack a few years down the line. She never complained. She never said it was too much for her, or, but that happened. And then my uncle was kind of left to his own, even though he had children. And why does that happen, by the way? Why does it always seem to the responsibility to fall in just one person, even if you have a bunch of family? Why does that happen?
This is so common that one person ends up with the majority of the burden or the responsibility. It can be a cause of contention amongst siblings. Maybe you're closer and your physical proximity makes you the de facto caregiver. Women bear a disproportionate burden of caregiving responsibilities just because of the way people are socialized, that the women are the nurturers who will take care. But it's really important to have these conversations with your team, right? Think of it like a group project. It's like, oh, I know I've got Edie on my team. She's going to put together a great paper. I don't have to try that hard. But if you're going to say, yes, I'm capable. Yes, I'm smart. Yes, I'm hardworking. But I would like your partnership in this project. Then you're establishing those expectations and the boundaries from the get-go. People aren't always going to comply, and it's not always going to be that easy. But what you can control is what you assert your needs and your expectations are.
That's a very good way to put it. Excellent.
Yeah.
So when people go to your support groups, what can they expect?
They can expect a warm welcome. We have couches. We have tea. We've got pillows. It really emulates, you know, just like coming to a best friend's house. You know, when you're having a hard time and you just kick off your shoes and you sit on their couch and you're like, that's what they can get, is that moment of you're around like-minded people who understand. They're going through it too. So while you could have friends who are well-intentioned, they may not understand it the way other caregivers would, who are actually living that experience day to day like you.
Right. And while people are encouraged to share, they don't have to if they don't feel comfortable, right?
Nope. Just like there's zero judgment, there's zero pressure. Sometimes we have people that don't contribute at all. Sometimes we have people who contribute once they get more comfortable. But I think even listening is therapeutic, and knowing there are other people like me going through this, this just makes you feel less alone, less alienated.
Right. And also, you can get some ideas on how to deal with your situation.
That is my favorite thing. We had a support group today. Bless you. And I love to see people coming back together. You know, during COVID, everybody sort of shifted to virtual support groups. There's really been an appetite to come back together in person. People are trading worksheets, names of therapists, names of, you know, doctors to see. And the being in these support groups is like a treasure trove. It's like a cheat code. You get to know, you know, all the best resources, and you want to share. It's also really, really rewarding when you find something that works for you. You know, you can share with the rest of the group because you know it may help someone else.
Right. And whatever you say remains, like we say, when what you do in Vegas remains in Vegas or something like that. But you say at Lisa's Care Connection stays within Lisa's Care Connection, within your support group.
Right? Exactly. So it's the you know, the HIPAA effect, but like Vegas, what happens there stays there. We do always disclose in the beginning that if you're in danger of hurting yourself or someone else as mandated reporters, you know, we do need to take proper steps to alert the appropriate authorities. But that's very, very rare. Mostly it's just people, and they can say stuff. They can curse. They can say, you know, I feel guilty that I will be relieved when my loved one passes. And things like that, it's okay. There's no judgment. This is the safe place to say that and explore those feelings.
Right. How often do the support groups meet?
Typically, they meet twice a month. However, what's nice is, well, those support groups, you know, only formally meet twice a month. A lot of people are forming these little communities and families, and they're meeting outside a support group. So they're on WhatsApp together. They're in group text chains. They're meeting up and getting coffee. So, you know, while it's an hour and a half twice a month, it really has a life beyond that.
And how long can people stay in the support group?
We have a unique philosophy in that we don't have a time limit. So people can stay as long as they need and as long as they feel comfortable. Once their loved one passes, we do have opportunities for them to, you know, be referred out or transition into grief groups, because that sort of setting and experience may be more relevant to them. But we never say, oh, you know, 3 months, 6 months, time to leave. You're the expert on yourself, and you let us know when you're ready to leave.
I know that. I stayed there for as long as I needed to stay. And my dad passed away almost a year before my mom. So I stayed within the support group for caregivers, but I also joined a grief support group because, like I said before, I adore my father. And I speak in present tense because I say love doesn't die.
Yes.
And some people feel weird talking about their loved one and saying, I love him. And they feel weird. And I don't. I really don't. Love doesn't die. It's going to die when I die. And maybe not even. Maybe mm-hmm. it'll go with me.
I think that's a really beautiful way to look at it. And I love how you light up when you talk about your family and your parents and all the values that they've bestowed on you. It's just so, so apparent how much they meant to you and how much you meant to them.
Thank you. Yes, they did. And I only wish that they had met you and they had met Lisa and they did meet my husband, but they got sick very soon after I got married. So my husband never got to see them at their prime. And they were awesome, awesome people. I was truly blessed with those parents. They weren't perfect, but they were what I needed.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And, you know, it's so funny because we got to talking. I found out that your husband went to school with my aunts and uncles. He even went to the high school that I went to many years later. And it just goes to show sort of what a small world it is and how tight-knit this community is. I'm so grateful you're in my life. I wish I'd met you in a different way. I didn't have to meet you in this way, but I did. And I'm glad that something has blossomed out of that.
It's one of the silver linings of, because everything comes with a blessing and a curse. And I don't even know if it was a curse that my parents got this. I will never know. Certainly not a blessing. And then again, maybe it was. Because it got me aware of this disease. It got me to take action in my own little way. I'm not a doctor, so I cannot contribute scientifically, but at least I can contribute with my experience mm-hmm. and try to help other people who are dealing with similar situations. Do you have any of this in your own family, may I ask?
I do. Out of respect to them, I'm not going to identify who they are.
Of course.
It's really, it makes me more empathetic as, you know, my background is in social work, but I feel like it makes me a more empathetic group facilitator, nonprofit leader to know what it's like to go through this in my family.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally get it and totally understand.
Yeah. And you don't have to have this in your family to have empathy for this experience. I'm really happy that more and more people are starting to talk about it in the media, even in film and television, how they're having more conversations around it. I think the more visibility we have around it, the less stigma there will be.
Yeah, it's an old book, movie, but I highly recommend it, The Notebook. Make you cry. It'll make you cry, but it'll make you understand a little bit about this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there are moments when people have lucidity, even mm-hmm. throughout this. And I think it's important to remind people of that and not talk to them in the third person when they're sitting right there next to you. Mm-hmm. You have to treat them with dignity and respect, always, always.
That's exactly right. I have one story that I will share about family, and that is my grandfather who had Parkinson's, and with that Parkinson's came a cognitive decline. And just like you said, don't ignore the person next to you. They're still a living, breathing person with thoughts and emotions and feelings. And I wasn't really responsive at that time or talking that much. I'd mentioned that I'd just gotten back from New York, and I would look at him when I would talk and I would share about New York because that's where he used to live. And even though he was barely saying anything, I named a restaurant that I went to and he said the cross street of those restaurants. And wow. He knew.
That's awesome. Yeah. So how do people find you? If let's say somebody in Pennsylvania happens to watch the podcast, or somebody in San Diego or anywhere in the nation, and they want to take advantage of all the tools and information that you have, how do they find you?
So I'm going to give my personal email and phone number. Is that okay to give here?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
So if you're not in Los Angeles and you can't come by to our center physically, please call or email me. It's Brianna, B-R-I-A-N-N-A. At leezascareconnection.org. That's L-E-E-Z-A-S, careconnection.org. They can also call me at 818-847-3686. And if you're in person, we're located in 1 South at Providence St. Joseph in Burbank. Come on in. We're open Monday through Thursday, 10 to 4. We love walk-ins. We love when people come in. We'll give you food. We'll give you a comfy couch to sit on. No judgment. Let us, you know, just take the load off and let us take care of you.
They'll give you a hug if you need one. Give the website again, please, because people, if they didn't catch it, give it again, please.
Leeza's Care Connection. So it's LeezasCare. connection.org.
And your phone number?
And the phone number is 818-847-3686. And it makes me so happy that you didn't give up, that you called that third number on your list. And that's one of the things that I love is you're not going to get an answering machine, a call center, you're going to get a real warm person on the other side of the line
right.
there to help you.
You might even get Leeza, like I did.
Right. Yeah. You might.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show. Bree.
I feel like we just started. I could talk to you.
I know. It goes fast. I want to thank you for everything that you're doing to help people. I want to thank you for coming to Leeza's Care Connection and sharing your talents and your experience with those of us who need it, and for supporting my dear, dear friend, Leeza. I adore her. She's awesome. She's as kind and generous and good-hearted as she is beautiful in the outside.
world's best boss. And she's not the kind of person that just puts her name on something. She is in the weeds, doing the work, meeting with the community members. We're constantly talking throughout the week, just watching how involved and authentic and sincere Lisa is. It's just so inspiring.
Do we have any fundraisers coming up?
So Edie was our greeter in beautiful black tie attire. She and her husband, Neil, at our big annual gala that just happened in the fall. And that is our senior prom. So it's an intergenerational senior prom for everybody from 18 to 100 plus.
And we promoted it on the show.
Yes, thank you for that. So we'll be having that again next year. So I know it's a ways away, but get excited. Keep that on your calendar. And we're also hoping to have, you know, a community bowl-a-thon in the new year. But the great thing is, you know, you don't need to wait for a fundraiser. You can always donate to Lisa's Care Connection. If you go to the website, there's a donate button. You know, we're funded through grants and donations. So it's really thanks to the generosity of, you know, supporters like you and the listeners that allow us to provide all of our services at no cost.
Again, thank you for your information. Thank you for your friendship. I am honored to now call you my friend. And I'm going to see you very soon. Thank you for coming to the EDJ Adler Show. And say, give Lisa a big hug.
I'll give her a big hug. Thanks again. You. Bye, Lola.
You're listening to The Edie J. Adler Show, only on LA Talk Radio.